Thank you, Matthew. Good to see you this morning. A few different faces here today. So I'll try and I'll allude to some of what we covered yesterday. Well, that's essential, but hopefully this will be standalone enough. A couple of things that I do want to say, though, by word of introduction. Loads of people said yesterday, can we have the slides? You can have the slides. The best thing to do is to email me. Please don't spam me. Don't sign me up for any mailing lists. But dre.peter@gmail.com if you would like the slides, and I will send them to you in the coming days. The other thing that I was asked at the end, we sort of rushed through the idea that Gen Z are the first true digitally native generation. And that means two things. It means that they spend a lot of their time online. In fact, the idea of having online and offline existence doesn't really make sense. It's just one. And therefore, there are some key ways in which Christians, including local churches, can be involved in digital ministry. But also what we saw is that to this generation who are intuitively digital, they're increasingly looking for practices, relationships, ways of being in the world that honor the body, their bodies, which honor space and places in time. And so I just want to, in 1 minute, say, what does that mean for us as church? It means that it's absolutely crucial that we're in digital spaces. The kind of way in which we're in digital spaces is important. And I don't expect it's in the bookshop here because it's quite niche. But if you're a local church, or if you have somebody, if you're somebody of influence within your local church, let me suggest Dave Adamson's book, Meta Church, to you, which is a real step-by-step vision for what it can look like for a normal local church on a normal budget in the UK to have a meaningful digital presence. And you'll see you don't have to invest in high-quality materials. You don't have to have drone shots. That's not what they're looking for. Actually, you, a head speaking to a camera, so long as the sound quality is good enough, might be good enough. And I think when it comes to digital ministry, really thinking about putting a stone in people's shoe, one thought that niggles with them, or which particularly could act as a hook to drawing them into Christ, is the right place for digital ministry for most churches. But also, here's the irony. Gen Z are also more open to just the normal embodied practices of life that actually aren't particularly cherished by digital existence. So actually, if in your church you share meals, or you celebrate the Lord's Supper, or you have the ordinance of baptism, and I trust that's probably all of our churches, that is wonderful. And in fact, we'll come on to this later, it seems that the most embodied forms of Christianity are those that are particularly engaging to this generation. And so I don't want you to come away thinking, oh goodness, now we've got to do digital ministry as well as all of these other things. No, actually, in as much as you can intentionally invite this generation into the normal embodied practices of church life, particularly when they're intergenerational, as we thought about yesterday, that's powerful. And, you know, the scriptures give us every confidence that as anyone of any generation hears the gospel and sees it lived out in the community of his people, that we can expect, in the power of the Holy Spirit, faith in Christ and love to well up. So, yes, there are some things that are new, but there are also some answers which are very, very old. All right, let's move on to today. We're going to think about reaching a health-conscious, spiritually open generation. Now, for those who weren't here yesterday, just a word on generational thinking. As Matthew said, we're not about stereotypes, nor are we saying there are only five people who are alive in the world today. What we are thinking is about how we set our calibration points, what we consider normal, and what we compare, what we encounter later in life, is largely set by the formative experiences of youth, adolescence, and early adulthood. So by about age 20, in your mind, in your vision, even in the affections of your heart, those things have been set in a way that you will compare everything that you encounter and experience later on in life. Okay, and so what we're really thinking about is, for this generation, born between 1997 and 2012, what do they consider to be normal, and what does that mean for us as we seek to minister to them, to reach them, to disciple them, and also to launch them into leadership? So first off, oh, that's just the generations that I introduced you to yesterday. First off, I want to introduce you to Gen Z as a health-conscious generation. They are probably the most health-conscious of any generation that is alive today. And that is for a whole number of reasons. One is that, certainly within Western society, but also true in most countries globally, is that there has been a shift when it comes to healthcare from treating disease, i.e. when you're already ill, to instead making shifts before you're ill in order to prolong not just the number of years that you're alive, but the quality of life that you have as you grow older. Now, this has happened because there were a whole number of quite major breakthroughs in healthcare in the second half of the 20th century. And so the number of illnesses, the number of deaths, which relate to childbirth or which relate to communicable diseases really decreased very sharply in the second half, and particularly towards the end of the 20th century. Isn't that a wonderful thing? And so in every country of the world, the life expectancy has dramatically improved. In fact, there is no country in the world now which has a life expectancy that is shorter than the very longest life expectancy before the outbreak of the Second World War. Norway, in 1939, had the longest life expectancy. There is now no country in the world that does not have a life expectancy that is more than Norway had in 1939. Isn't that amazing? And so what that's meant, particularly in wealthier Western countries, is that health messaging has moved away from simply, this is what you should do when you're ill, when you have these symptoms, to, here is how you stay healthy. And particularly, not only here is how you live longer, but here's how you can have more healthy years as you age. Okay? And so what I've wanted to do here is to kind of shift, is to embody these two ways of thinking. We're moving away from merely thinking about pills, but thinking to vitamins. Okay, now all of us have heard this messaging. All of us can reel back the number of steps that you're supposed to do, which, by the way, has changed, did you notice, in the past week. All of us can tell you how many fruit and veg you ought to eat per day. Some of us might be able to say the number of hours that you need to sleep or the amount of water that you should be drinking every day, and all of these sorts of things, okay? But for Gen Z, this messaging has been front and center for the whole of their lives, okay? And interestingly, what's gone with that is technological means of being able to constantly evaluate all of those measures. So I don't know how many of you here are wearing smart technology, and you can tell me exactly not only how many hours you slept last night, but how much REM sleep you had last night, all of the rest. Okay, now, what this means is, for our parents' and grandparents' generation, they may not have thought about their health very often. They thought about their health, A, when they were ill, and B, when they went to a doctor to talk about their symptoms. Today, we think about our health all the time. Okay? Probably already today, there have been decisions around, and just in the back of your mind, it's, I want to extend my years and my quality of life, so I will do this or I won't do this. I will eat this, I won't eat this. Okay? That is the world in which Gen Z have grown up. Here's another shift. well, this goes with it, that digital tech makes our health a focus like never before. Okay, so where digital tech is amazing is that it's personalized. Okay, that's the appeal of it. You wear a smartwatch because it's not telling you how many steps somebody else has walked today or how much REM sleep somebody else has had today. It's talking to you. And therefore, it's reflective of the way in which we think about health. We want it to become increasingly individualized, personalized, giving us feedback. And we think about it all the time. Okay. Third shift. The pandemic has reinforced that all of life is connected. Now, the pandemic affected everyone. But our experience of the pandemic would have been quite different from each other's experience. And one of the most defining characteristics of experience is the age you were during the pandemic. Now, it seems as though, whilst Gen Z got out of the pandemic, by and large, physically, without very much symptom, in other ways, the pandemic was awful for them. And perhaps if you're Gen Z, you look back and you just think, that was an awful period of life. Particularly, that was seen around mental health. So a very, very high percentage of Gen Z, not only in Britain, actually, but around the world, experienced severe mental health symptoms during the pandemic. And a lot of that actually was to do with their stage of development. And I think we should have a huge amount of compassion, actually, if we're of a different age group, for those who had to experience the pandemic during adolescence. It's extremely difficult for them. Not only was there a spike in mental health symptoms for Gen Z during the pandemic, Gen Z have also taken the longest to return to the quality of life that they had before the pandemic. They've taken much longer than any other living generation. And in fact, in many measures, they still haven't got back as a generation to their pre-pandemic health measures. And that's particularly seen in things like anxiety, particularly amongst women, and in loneliness and negative health symptoms that go with feeling lonely, particularly amongst men. Now, the pandemic then was a huge shaper of how Gen Z see the world. And in particular, what it showed them is something which actually intuitively they would have held as a generation already, which is this. You cannot separate health measures into hermetically sealed categories. In other words, they know firsthand that when your mental health is bad, it affects your physical health. It shows in physical symptoms, but it also shows in relational symptoms as well. Or we might flip it and say, actually, relationally, when you're in poor health, that affects all other aspects of your health as well. This is actually a very biblical way of thinking about health, by the way. So, I'll return to that in just a moment, because there's one other thing that I want to say on this, and somebody asked a question about this yesterday. What's social media's role in this? Social media and breaking news are more immersive than ever. Okay, so again, if you think back 20 years ago, if there was to be a major news story, how you would hear it compared to how you would hear it today, okay? Social media, breaking news, more immersive than ever. It's said that Gen Z have the lowest level of hopefulness of any generation since that which just came out after the Second World War. And they're more anxious by some measures than the generation that came out of the Second World War. Why is this? Well, I think this is part of the reason. That actually they just have more awareness and familiarity with what's going on in the world, and social media acts as a sort of mirror by which you're constantly having to measure what you're encountering and even measure yourself as well. Now, all of these factors, then, are affecting how Gen Z think about health and particularly mental health. So probably until about 40 years ago, this is largely how most people in the UK would have thought about health. That you have your life circumstances that exist in one sphere, and then you have physical health, things around exercise, sleep, nutrition, and medical care, that by and large operate in a different sphere. Okay, so if you went to the doctor with a physical symptom, you might actually be quite offended if they ask you how are things at work or what's going on in your family. Okay, and so if you had a problem in the area of physical health, you'd normally go and see a doctor. Now, even around 40 years ago, some change was beginning to take place around mental health. But by and large, if you had mental health symptoms that were troubling, you would go and see a counselor. Okay? Now, for many of us, this is still, by and large, the default way that we would think about our health. I've got my life circumstances over here, I've got my physical circumstances here, and I've got mental health over there. And yes, there's a little bit of a relationship between them, but honestly, not very much. Okay, here is how Gen Z think about health this side of the pandemic. Mental health, relational health, environmental health, I don't mean that in a kind of, you know, you'll call the council in because there's cockroaches or whatever, but the broader environment in which you find yourself and physical health all relate to each other. So in other words, if I break my leg and I'm not able to exercise, I think, oh goodness, that will probably affect my relational health because I can't see people and I can't do all of the activities that I would hope to in the same way. And oh, that might also affect my mental health. It might even affect the way in which I shape my environment. Now, what I want to suggest is that, in fact, to many Gen Z, even the term mental health is now redundant. There is just health. And all of these things relate to each other. And you expect them to relate to each other. Now, we know this to some extent, don't we? That actually, if we're struggling in one of these areas, there's an impact in the rest of them as well. For Gen Z, because such a high percentage of them experienced severe mental health symptoms during the pandemic or since, and even if they haven't experienced them themselves, they know someone who has. Actually, the fear of mental health crisis is something which lingers in their subconscious for a lot of the time. And therefore, what does that mean? That means, oh goodness, if actually my neighbor is noisy, that's not just affecting my environmental health, but that might also affect my sleep. And if that affects my sleep, then that might affect my mental health. I might not have the ability to regulate my emotions, to be as resilient as I would like to be later in the day. Oh, and if I'm actually not a very nice person to be around, then perhaps that will affect my relational health as well. Do you see, in the mind of Gen Z, all of these aspects of health are related to each other. Now, I would want to critique this, and particularly I would want to critique the kind of generational temptation, let's use that word, to catastrophize. Okay, if something goes wrong in one place, then inevitably the whole thing's going to fall down like a house of cards. Do you notice, however, how close this is to the biblical concept of shalom, of peace, of health, of well-being, of something which embraces the whole of my personhood? And I think actually their way of thinking about health is a gentle pushback, a gentle critique to those of us who want to live our lives in hermetically separated spheres and actually can end up justifying all sorts of bad things through doing so. Now, the eagle-eyed amongst you will see that I've added one other form of health to this diagram, spiritual health, which embraces it all. Now, We'll come on to this in a bit more detail later on. Part of the reason for Gen Z's openness to spirituality is their increasing belief, actually, that if you have spiritual belief, it can benefit all of these other areas of health, particularly mental health, but also relational health and these other forms of health as well. And so part of the reason, I think, in which we're seeing an increasing openness to spirituality and even an increasing openness to the church, to Christianity, and to the person of Jesus, is this intuition that if I have spiritual belief, this might help me in my health in other areas of my life. Okay. What does this mean then? How we think about wellness, you might not like that word, sorry, but I'm talking about more than just health as in physical health. How we think about wellness is changing. There's a really interesting study, which you can find online, that talks about the instinctive metaphors that people of different ages use to describe their body. Now, if you were probably over about 30, the metaphors that you will most commonly turn to when you are talking about your body are machine metaphors. Oh, I just needed time to unplug. I've got too many plates spinning. I need to recharge. You know, a lot of these things, okay? Honestly, now I've said this to you, you will be surprised by the number of times you use sort of factory language, mechanistic engineering language to describe what's going on in your body. Now, when you stop and think about this, by the way, we do the same with the brain. The idea that the brain is a supercomputer, for example. I just need more processing time, all of that sort of thing, okay? If you think of your body as being a bit like a machine, what are you actually saying your body is for? What is a machine for? What is a factory for? It's to produce, it's to achieve, it's to do things. That's what you're saying your body is for. And therefore, when your body is healthy, your body is healthy, and that's great because it allows you to be productive. Okay? Now, by and large, that was the way of thinking about our bodies for generations, actually. Now, here is what has happened in the last, let's say, 10 years. People, and if you are, let's say, under 30, this is the language that you will more naturally reach for. It will be that my body is like an ecosystem. So they'll talk about vibes, being grounded, rooted, flow, rhythm, seasonality, okay, biorhythms, this sort of thing, okay? Connection, connectivity, okay? We've moved from my body is like a machine to my body is like an ecosystem. And interestingly, philosophically, this is where we've moved as well. There's a really interesting paper. Some of you are familiar with the idea of the wood wide web? Okay, that in a forest, you have all of these fungi underneath the ground that allow trees to kind of talk to each other and share nutrients. People are saying, well, maybe that's a bit like what our bodies are like. And again, there is some medical evidence for that one part of the body can compensate for ill health elsewhere. And so we've moved away in our minds from thinking my body is like a machine to my body is like an ecosystem. Now, what is an ecosystem for? Well, really, it's there to support life. It's much more passive. Okay, so it's much less actually about producing. Although we might talk about being fruitful, which is kind of interesting, isn't it, with our biblical brain switched on. But it's much more about experiencing authentic life. And therefore, I might actually sacrifice areas of my own productivity in order to live a life which is full and authentic. Now, I'm beginning to sound like someone who's Gen Z. Okay? But let me complicate it one bit more, because I think, actually, Gen Z aren't entirely honest when they speak about their bodies in this way. I think it's more like this, actually. My body is like the Eden Project. How many people here have been to the Eden Project in Cornwall? Okay, good number. It's an amazing place, isn't it? And one of the great things about the Eden Project is that it can grow plants that would not normally grow in Cornwall. Okay, and so you can walk around the Eden Project, and it's amazing because of the sheer range of life that's there. But the only way that you can maintain life within the Eden Project is if everything is very closely monitored. Okay, and so you have people there whose full-time job is to make sure that the humidity is just right, that the temperature is just right, that the soil pH is just right. They know that if those things get out of kilter, then the plant will die, because those things don't really belong in Cornwall. Now, I think actually, functionally speaking, this is how most Gen Zers, Zoomers, think about their bodies. It's amazing. It's producing this incredible life. But the big bad world is out to disrupt that. And if one thing goes wrong in my life, then perhaps the whole thing could be thrown out of kilter. I have one bad night's sleep, and then I won't be able to be emotionally resilient enough to see through the day. And if I'm stressed about that, then maybe I'll get a headache. And maybe that will affect my other relationships as well. And so in their minds, the body is beautiful, fragile, but in need of constant attention. Now, I don't want to particularly go into this, but you will find authors who talk about a fragile mindset and an anti-fragile mindset. Okay, the fragile mindset is this one, the idea they would say, teenagers, young adults, they think they're so fragile that one thing will happen to them, they're thrown off course. The thing to do is basically to be anti-fragile, to man up. Okay, and there are some very well-known authors who write about Gen Z who basically say that. By the way, neither of those is wholly biblical. Neither fragile mindset nor anti-fragile mindset is very helpful. Bible allows us to talk about weakness, but actually even in the means of weakness, depending upon each other and learning to depend upon the Lord, which can give us a resilience that we could have never had by ourselves. So, just for 2 minutes around your table, biblically speaking, what do you think that many Gen Zers hold about well-being, health, and the human body that's right and true? And do you see any shortcomings in this view of well-being, health, and the human body? Again, if you were born between 1997 and 2012, I'm so thankful you're here. You're the experts. And so if you've got somebody in your group, around your table, or in your pair who's from that generation, let them speak first. Okay, 3 or 4 minutes. I'm going to keep moving because I want to leave a bit more time for questions and comments at the end. Here's something which, in working with people from Gen Z, including those in Christian ministry, I found quite helpful. This is a secular tool, but I think reflects a lot of biblical wisdom. Do you know what? The idea that the body is like a plant is a good one. If you've got to choose between that and factory, plant is much better and much more biblical. But Jesus makes it clear that actually fruitfulness and growth comes not when you just leave a plant by itself. Okay? And so Jesus will talk about pruning. Jesus will talk about how actually, and again, science shows this to be true, that actually it's as plants are weathered that they grow stronger. Jesus would talk about the need to put down deep roots. That idea of rootedness actually is all over the Bible. Okay, now, and so the image itself isn't a bad one. But actually the way in which a plant grows is not to wrap it in cotton wool. Okay, in fact, I'm not really a gardener, but somebody was telling me the other day that there are some plants that if you leave them inside for too long, they collapse under their own weight because they can't support the branches and the fruit that they have. Okay? That actually affliction, pushing ourselves outside of our comfort. Jesus is not being anti-fragile when he says to the disciples, drop everything and follow me. And what he is saying, actually, is sometimes stepping out of your comfort zone, leaving things behind, taking the path of sacrifice is the one that leads you to true life. All right? So this is a secular tool, but I find it super helpful in talking with Gen Z colleagues, people in church, about what we're talking about here. It's a concept from psychology by two guys called Yerkes and Dodson. And they talk about, for peak performance, there is a level of pressure which helps us to get to our best performance. They basically say, if you're not stretched at all, you're bored. And therefore, you don't really perform, or I think to use Jesus' terminology, you're not fruitful. Actually, even fruitfulness and growth, sanctification, tends not to happen on an upward steady curve, but tends to come in bursts, and they tend not to be the parts of life in which we're understimulated. And then they say there is a time in which you can feel comfortable when you're being asked to do something that you know you can do, which isn't asking something of you, which is an immense strain upon you. And actually, you can grow that to achieving to quite a high degree. And that's great, isn't it? Because in our work lives, and in much of church life, you see rhythms which happen week after week and which genuinely contribute to your personal and corporate fruitfulness. But you notice, they say, the time in which you reach peak performance is on the cusp between stretch and strain. You know, I think if we were to use evangelical language, it's those moments in which you push yourself out of your comfort zone and you get the little rush of adrenaline and it makes you pray more and you find that the Lord was able to see you through. And you actually look back on those times and think, that was a time of huge growth. But also, as I was growing personally, the Lord was giving me more to give away as well. Now, beyond that, they say, there's a moment in which you can fall very quickly into panic. You push someone too hard, and their body starts to shut down because they can't cope. Now, generationally, I think, some of us would think, well, it's probably best, if you've got to choose between them, to be at the left-hand side of this diagram. And actually, some of us have put in long hours, and we've overworked. And perhaps those in our youth groups or our children or our grandchildren have seen us enter the panic zone. And even if we've got through, they've been the ones who've borne the symptoms of it. And they say, well, I don't want that. And therefore, they're over at the other side of the curve. I found this very helpful, actually, to say, look, in asking you to sacrifice, in asking you to step outside of your comfort zone, I'm not asking you to panic. That's not where I'm wanting to put you. I am wanting to move you into this stretch strain zone. You don't want to live there. But actually, perhaps this is a way in which you will find that. A, you have more resilience than you thought you did. But also that the Lord is able to meet you in your weakness in the way that he promises he will. Okay. So I think particularly for those of you who are working with emerging leaders, you'll find that many younger leaders default towards talking a lot about boundaries, a lot about wanting to protect their world. And this fear really is, well, if you push me one millimeter too far, then I'll have a mental health crisis and it will affect everything else. Okay? We need real discernment generationally as we talk with each other about when life gets hard, those times in which it's worth pushing through, and those times in which it's worth stepping back. And I think actually generationally, that's an important conversation for us to have in our perspectives together. So very quickly, what does it look like to engage the health-conscious generation? Celebrate embodiment as a good gift of God. Try to do that in church life as much as you can, but also in your leisure activities in as much as you can. Be prepared to validate genuine struggle. I genuinely do think that Gen Z had a harder experience of the pandemic than any other living generation. It may well be, actually, that their general levels of energy have dropped as a result of that. So I think we can talk about that with levels of compassion. Offer a biblical view of weakness, neither fragility nor anti-fragility. 2 Corinthians is a great place to be this week for thinking about those issues. Balance, challenge and support. So if you're going to push someone further, then ensure that they have the adequate support to help them. Debriefing for resilience, particularly when you've asked somebody to lead something for the first time. Then when you pray with them afterwards, how did you find it? What did you find hard? Next time, what can that's helpful, not only to turn mindset towards thankfulness to God, to put a name on resilience, but actually if it has been pushed somebody into the panic zone, to avoid doing that again. And the big aim, as I've said, is discerning together when to push through, i.e. healthy stretch, and when to step back in healthy boundaries. Now, I do want to leave some time for comments at the end, so I'm going to zoom through the spiritually open generation. All right, every 6 months, YouGov ask people in the UK, do you believe in God? And you can break this down by generation. And here are the figures for Gen Z. Frustratingly, they're just about to ask the question again, but Keswick's come slightly too early. But, so they say, people have different beliefs about God or gods. Which of the following matches your view? The green line is, I believe there is a God or there are gods. 45% of Gen Z say that. 34% say, I do not believe in any sort of gods or spiritual power. 11% say, I do not believe in a God or gods, but I do believe there's some sort of spiritual greater power. 11% don't know. All right, what do we notice about this graph? It's very early. So we do not know yet if this is a trend which will be established. But do you notice that since August 2022, every time the question has been asked, more members of Gen Z are saying, I believe in God or I believe in gods. At the same time, the number of those who believe in some sort of spiritual greater power other than God or gods has consistently gone down. And those who don't believe in any sort of God is declining as well. And so for the first time in a very long time, there are more young people who say they believe in God than those who say, I definitely do not believe in God. Now, this is very early, but it does seem as though something is going on here. Some of you will be aware of the paper that Bible Society put out called The Quiet Revival. In fact, whilst I wish they'd not used the word revival, it has generated some prayer and love and focus for this generation, and you might not be here had they not used that word at this workshop. And so they found that there was a rise in regular church going across the UK, but particularly amongst 18 to 24s, from 4% in 2018 to 16% in those that they interviewed in 2024, which is remarkable. And so what are we to do with this? Figures always need interpreting. So how are we to interpret what's going on here? Let me add one more thing to kind of complicate this. Ipsos Mori, this is a survey that they did for the whole of Europe, and they found that British Gen Z are less likely than, compared to their grandparents, baby boomers, they're less likely to identify as Protestant or evangelical, less likely to identify as atheist or agnostic, and less likely to believe that religion does more harm than good. However, they're also much more likely to identify as Roman Catholic, to identify as Muslim, and do a whole load of spiritual things. Pray, attend a place of worship at least monthly, believe in God, heaven, hell, the devil, and supernatural spirits. Believe people with religious beliefs are better citizens and that they are happier, and to have respect for people with religious beliefs. So remember, this is compared to their grandparents. Okay, this is really interesting, isn't it? So, why are young Britons apparently so spiritually open? I reckon there are loads of things going on here, and there is immense opportunity, but we must not also be complacent to the scale of the challenge that we have before us. Why are young Britons so spiritually open? Firstly, they're much more likely to be Muslim. Now, this is something that a lot of the statistics don't pick up on. Okay? X percentage of people believe in God. Oh, isn't this wonderful? Yes. But Islam, as we saw yesterday, is overrepresented within amongst Gen Z and is also growing more quickly than any other religious affiliation in the UK. And so if we go back to that previous page, Muslims believe in God, heaven, hell, the devil, and supernatural spirits as well. Okay, so we're not to think that these are all people who suddenly have adopted a Christian outlook. Secondly, many recent immigrants are Christian. Okay, so Christians amongst the world's immigrants are disproportionately overrepresented. Those who've come to the UK to claim asylum, or those who've come to the UK for other reasons, are disproportionately likely to be Christian. Therefore, more immigrants are Christian. And we're seeing that not only in those who very recently arrived, but also those whose parents arrived at the end of the Blair-Brown government, who have now, in the statistics, tipped over into being Gen Z, particularly those from Central Europe, Slovakia, Czech Republic, Poland, other places which are, certainly in the case of Slovakia and Poland, traditionally Roman Catholic. Thirdly, they're much less likely to hold negative perceptions of religion. This is a picture of the tragic 7/7 bombings that took place in 2005, which Gen Z don't remember. Nor do they remember the 9/11 attacks. Nor do they remember the Northern Ireland peace process. And therefore, they're much more likely to think, well, of course religion is a good thing. When I look out and see it, of course religion is a good thing. They're also third generation unchurched. In other words, it's not that they've grown up in the church and left, or that their parents grew up and left, but their grandparents left the church. And therefore, they don't have parents who perhaps are deeply scarred by what they perceived as the church failings. It's ancient history to them. And therefore, they're much less likely to hold negative perceptions of both religion as a whole, but Christianity in particular. Fourthly, lots became unsatisfied with atheism's answers during the pandemic. I have lost count of the number of people I've talked to on campus, and they've espoused some kind of spiritual belief to me. I said, oh, that's really interesting. Have you always seen the world that way? And here's what invariably most people say. Oh, no, I grew up an atheist. I believed in just materialist reality. Then I realized during the pandemic that atheism was existentially bankrupt. It couldn't offer me hope, purpose, meaning that literally could get me out of bed in the morning. And so I'm not sure what's right, but I know that atheism is wrong. Honestly, I cannot tell you how many times I've encountered that on campus. Actually, to meet a genuine atheist on campus now in Britain is relatively rare. And so, this has been supercharged by people like Jordan Peterson, who said, well, you need a meaning. You don't have a meaning. And then fifthly, many believe that religion or spirituality can improve their mental health, okay? They're not looking necessarily to Christianity in particular, but they do believe that a spiritual belief, a spiritual grounding, something that can give them meaning, may improve their mental health. Some of you may have seen more young adults turning up at church. We've seen it. At my church, we had four sort of very gruff, I'm trying not to talk about stereotypes here today, but if you think about the stereotypical young Yorkshireman, okay, four of them turned up at our church. And actually, these are not people that, by and large, evangelical churches in Leeds have done very well at reaching over the years, but they turned up as a four together, sat down together as the church service began. And when you talk to them about, well, why are you here? Nearly always they've been personally invited by someone. Occasionally they've been hooked in by social media. Sometimes they've Googled or asked AI their questions and it said, well, why don't you go to this church? That's happened to us once. But nearly always it boils down to one of these. I'm after meaning, I'm after purpose. And I know atheism can't provide it. Or, essentially, I'm after therapy. I'm after anything that will help me to get more ballast when it comes to my mental health outlook. Now, are they bad reasons for coming to church? No. If they are the only questions that you ask when you are in church, will you come to a faith in Jesus that will keep you persevering? No. And therefore, I think we have tremendous opportunity. But there is also great challenge. Here are some of the challenges. Many have a stronger sense of identity with their childhood religion than their parents or their grandparents, especially Muslims. So yes, let's celebrate those who are coming to church. Muslims, by and large, are not coming to church. And they may be more committed to Islam than their parents or grandparents. And unless our churches have in mind means of engaging with a large and growing sector of Gen Z in Britain, then we may lose them entirely. Secondly, many are exploring alternative spiritualities, even those in church. I think our expectations of when young people turn up in church who are unchurched dates from about 10 years ago. About 10 years ago, if somebody came to church at the height of Richard Dawkins, you're like, flipping heck, this person must be really interested. Honestly, now they might be interested a bit, but they would be interested in a whole load of other things at the same time. They will turn anywhere, almost anywhere, where they can find purpose or therapy. And so many are exploring alternative spiritualities, including those in church. 7 in 10 Gen Z in the UK engage in manifesting. You know, this idea of seeking to bring something into existence through focused intention. When asked why they embrace manifesting, half said it's to help them achieve their goals. 40% say it improves their well-being and helps attract opportunities. And then there are other reasons there as well. I would reckon these statistics would not be very different, A, to seekers who are turning up in your church from Gen Z, but also a scary number of Christians. Because remember yesterday, we thought about how they're not strictly relativists, but they might say, do you know what? Yeah, within its world, manifesting makes sense. Just as within his world, saying that Jesus is the way, truth, and life makes it sense as well. And finally, they're increasingly open to church, but many are confused. Here's the image which I quite like. You might know there was a Banksy that got spray painted over, and it sort of changed the meaning of Banksy's work. And you can kind of work out the point that Banksy was originally making, but it's really hard to see beyond the spray paint. And in the same way, Gen Z use a lot of biblical words, but in very non-biblical ways. And so sometimes when you may ask them questions, they think, well, this person is definitely a believer. They're obviously being very clearly saved. It turns out that they use grace or atonement or redemption in ways that actually don't mean what we think they mean. So what does this mean? How do we engage the spiritual open? I mean, let's celebrate that they're coming to our churches. I honestly cannot imagine 3 or 4 years ago that those 4 people would have just turned up at Redeemer, my church, like they did. So let's thank the Lord for this, and let's trust that as in our relationships, as we celebrate the sacraments, as we preach, as we demonstrate the fruit of the Spirit in our relationships together, that those with ears to hear will come to a solid trust in Jesus. But let's also ask lots of questions. Not interrogating, but taking a genuine interest in their lives, seeking to see the world through their eyes, helping them to understand what it could look like for Jesus to be their treasure, their Lord, their Savior. Secondly, don't immediately dismiss a person's Christian profession. My sense is that more Gen Z are describing themselves as Christian than even have the faintest idea what Jesus claimed. But the image I use here is, it's a bit like when you meet a nominal Liverpool supporter. You know, the type that, oh, I support Liverpool. Oh, you support Liverpool. What do you think of the new signings? What new signings? What do you think of the manager? Oh, I couldn't tell you who the manager is. Could you find Liverpool on a map? I could not. Now, there are 2 things you can say at that point. One is, you are not a Liverpool supporter, which is true. but ends the conversation and ends the relationship. Or you could say, oh, you're a Liverpool supporter and you've never been to Anfield. Shall we go together? I can get tickets. When you meet somebody who says, I'm Christian, but they're only ever talking about it in either therapeutic or philosophical terms, say, I'm a Christian. Wow, you are too. How about we spend some time reading the Bible together? I think that would do you good. I think that would do me good. Okay, so don't pour cold water. You might eventually, 6 months down the line, have to say, you are not a Christian. Often, they will come to that conclusion themselves when they've actually spent time with you and in Christian community and in the Word. Thirdly, don't assume they're using Christian terminology in the same way as you. Already said enough on that. Don't assume if a person is exploring Christianity, they're only exploring Christianity. And therefore, actually, if you're a preacher talking about the uniqueness of Jesus is so important. The uniqueness of Jesus in a world of religions, yes, but also the uniqueness of Jesus in a world of therapies as well. Perhaps even more important. What can Jesus offer that good therapy cannot? Jesus is the best therapy, but Jesus also says, come and die. Help them to see that Jesus' person and work are completely unique. And then finally, always be ready to share your hope. Do you know what? The last thing that I would want anybody to feel coming away from this generation just feel like a different species to mine. Therefore, I'm just going to subcontract them to other people who are slightly younger than me. No. In fact, really know what we saw yesterday. There is a wonderful opportunity for genuine intergenerational ministry, relationship, and care. And so trust that as you preach the gospel and share your life, the Spirit can use that. In fact, I met somebody yesterday. He said, the Pentecostal preachers in my town are doing wonderful work amongst Gen Z. I don't understand it. They're breaking all of the rules about contextualization. But the reason is they're to the point and they're passionate. And there's an extent to which if you just let your love for Jesus show itself. And sometimes you say it like it is and you show that you're your authentic you and that Jesus permeates all of your life. Then the Lord can use that. Right, we've got 4 or 5 minutes. So I'd love to hear any questions, comments. I'll try and get through as many of these before we leave the room.
You mentioned that the Gen Z were growing up without parents and grandparents that weren't in the faith. So what's happening to the Gen Z that have grown up with
amazing
Christian family?
So what's happened? Amazing. Particularly, I don't know how many of you are familiar with the K-curve. It's an idea in economics that you can have people who start in the same place, but then because of circumstances, some fall away entirely and some go to incredible new heights. Essentially, that's what's happened with Gen Z. A large number disengaged during the pandemic, particularly actually those from non-evangelical backgrounds. What I found time and again, though, is that committed Gen Z are very committed, many of them. They still breathe the same air culturally as their peers. They drink the same water. They have the same temptations. But whereas many people, often it was in their late teens that they decided to follow Jesus, if Gen Z were in their early teens when the pandemic came, often that was the kickstart to their serious following Jesus. And so, honestly, I mean, I love this generation, but honestly, the most exciting church leaders in the UK, I think, at the moment, are all under 32. And they need care, they need prayer, they need mentoring, they've got blind spots. But the Lord seems to be raising up a wonderful generation who will lead us through perhaps what might be quite a challenging next decade or two.
I've seen a similar kind of trickle of people, especially young men, coming into church after kind of dabbling online. But I feel quite aware that there's a huge number of people who hit that online space And maybe because of the increased disconnection or whatever, never leave.
Yeah.
Never leave there. And I've not really ever felt particularly equipped, or I don't feel like the church has felt particularly equipped to get people offline and embodied, apart from those who are really willing. Have you got any?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer would be read Dave Adamson's book Meta Church, where essentially he says connectivity is one of the three things that Christians should be looking for in their online engagement. So we want it to be relevant, we want it to be findable, but you also want to be drawing as much as possible into embodied community. Now, there are things that local churches can do there. It means that when you think about your online presence, stop trying to reach the world, start trying to reach probably the square mile around where your church lives. And the more that is based, and the more that you can do that, the more you can find that there is space for genuine engagement. I'm happy to talk further about exactly what that could look like in the break. One more? Or we've got to finish?
There's one over here if I can get to it.
I'll make it quick so that we don't get in trouble with the children's leaders.
Okay. No, I was a bit curious about what you talked about just now in terms of spiritual open people. And yesterday it was clearly, you mentioned it was men, young men in particular,
yeah.
Which is also a global trend. And then we're talking about also yesterday with the political side of things.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of curious, what's your response or thinking with regards to, in particularly young Z generation women who would say, well, be careful about these young people because they're Nazis, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
What's your thinking? Yeah.
I'll give a very short answer to this because you could give a much longer answer. But it is true that some of those who are coming to church from the far right, which are of increasing prevalence amongst this generation. As I said, I think around 1 in 6 Gen Z men hold views that veer dangerously close to misogyny or even racist views. They're often turning up in church, hoping that the church will give them ballast to support their views. Now, again, if we have an attraction mindset, we'll think, well, we'll do anything to keep them here. Okay? To be faithful to Scripture and actually to serve women well, the church is going to have to disappoint some of those who turn up at church with those views, and we'll have to take the time to disciple them, to understand that Jesus would not endorse those views. Jesus, who is the perfect man, shows us what true masculinity is like, and that means rejecting a whole load of false ideas about masculinity that currently exists within our culture.